This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Mississippi U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Mississippi U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith is passionate about protecting the agriculture community in her Delta state. She has high hopes for writing a farm bill in 2024 and is determined to see policy that doesn't discriminate producer eligibility based on adjusted gross income or other means. From the global perspective, Hyde-Smith says it's in the best interest of the nation to help our allies.
We're concerned about Ukraine. We certainly want Ukraine to have what they need, that they can win their war. And I'm confident that most Americans want Israel to eliminate Hamas and for Ukraine to have, you know, the adequate resources, because the Russian aggression is real. And we are certainly supporting Ukraine in that effort, because we don't want something like that happening in our own country. You know, it's just been pretty evident with the $75 billion in the United States that's sent to Ukraine. It's just amazing, Jeff, to talk to these people of the things that are going on. But now you've got so many facets throughout the country, things that we're paying attention to and that we are having a lot of discussion about here, the right path, the right way to go about protecting our own country while we are helping those countries.
If I'm not mistaken, the Senate GOP has proposed tying border security with the White House calls for more money for those two countries. What are the consequences of supporting or not supporting either of those?
Well, to get the attention of the Democratic Party, the only way that we're going to force anything on the southern border is to let them know that we're not willing to budge on enforcing anything or putting out anything if the border is not included in that. We're doing it in return for additional foreign aid. It's just not reasonable, but it's absolutely necessary. My people in Mississippi are telling me that they want that border secured for the very, very obvious reasons that we need to secure that border. And it is literally unreal to me of why the White House and this administration is not willing to do everything in their power to secure that border. And it's totally the opposite of what we're finding right now.
Senator, what are your thoughts on the 23 extension of the Farm Bill? And then, in your crystal ball, what are the prospects for a 24 bill?
Well, Chairman Stabenow suggests the $4 to $5 billion base updates and reference prices would cost more. The IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, is, you know, it's just a clever way of effectively amending the Farm Bill by providing funding and spending authority for various conservation programs. But unfortunately, a substantial amount of those funds simply won't be. They can't be spent due to the unreasonable climate and clean energy stipulations that are tied to it. You know, we say all the time, elections have consequences, but when you are dealing with this farm bill, it's incredible the things that they're trying to get across that we have to combat. We have to play a lot of defense, and we just have so many other ideas. Why not rescind those IRA funds that cannot and will not be spent to pay for real and much needed farm bill improvements? Because that's why Congress revisits the farm bill every 5 years. But it is truly a struggle, and hopefully we will get there. But, you know, I will never back off of my position on the things that we have to have in the Farm Bill when they're trying to attach climate change and things like that to it. So I think we're going to get there, but we have to stand strong, and we have to live in the real world and be the adult in the room and the reasonable voices of what must be included in the Farm Bill and the only thing that we would accept.
A GAO report recently suggested adding a means test that would limit premiums for larger subscribers to crop insurance. There are savings, but the question is, are the savings worth perhaps throwing the system into imbalance?
Well, this is, on top of everything else, kind of the added load of what I just described. But discriminating against one farmer versus the other simply because of their adjusted gross income is truly counterintuitive. Large farms, like it or not, they account for most of the food and fiber produced in this country, and they carry the heavy load, the majority of it. So why shouldn't they have access to adequate farm safety net protections like everyone else? I mean, do we really want large farms to go out of business? And the reason we have those programs in there is to protect them, to give them every tool possible to make them successful. Just because large farms equates to more acres means more environmental contributions through the conservation programs. So why should large farms be excluded? It makes no sense. We need to keep our eye on the ball here, and all farms, large and small, need equal and fair access to commodity and conservation programs, but you should not be penalized because someone has the opinion of, oh, you're big and you're large and your family does this. You know, we all have to be in this together, but it should be equal and not just concentrating on the very, very small farmer to make sure that they, and sometimes my opinion, get a lion's share of what's adequate is not, you know, at the table. It's just to make sure that they get a certain amount when we need to be reasonable and fair across the board to everyone.
I suppose it could be said that even though they received a large benefit from crop insurance, they did pay more in premiums, and because they had larger acreage or enterprise units, they lost more money before they received a check.
Exactly. The risks are much steeper. You're dealing with, obviously, a larger volume, more exposure. You know, success is success, but it's on different levels. And I want all of these farmers to be successful in a fair way.
It would be somewhat of a similar or related idea, the concern that some have over the USDA's administration of the ERP program. Is that issue of implementation, or is that an issue of a lack of funds, or a little bit of both?
Probably a little bit of both. The ERP program, in our opinion, it's flawed in many instances, just like catfish in our state. You know, we produce more catfish than any other state in the country. And, of course, I'm the former ag commissioner. I keep that hat on all the time. And through the years, I've had to fight so hard for them. But it's important to my state. You know, the producers and processors aren't even eligible for rural disasters they face each year in and year out. And we always talked about disease and bird depredation. So we need to amend the USDA Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Fish programs in the next Farm Bill to make things right, because they have to have that protection too, because it is amazing how much of a percentage those birds can take out overnight out of a catfish pond. And that is a loss to that producer. You know, they tell me if 5,000 cormorants stay on the pond, fish pond for 2 months, they eat about $1 million worth of fish. In my opinion, Jeff, that's a disaster. But that's not what catfish producers are currently eligible for in terms of assistance, because, you know, they have a commodity. They have a product that they grow very well, and they've worked very hard to make that industry successful. And we want them to be successful because we've got to feed this country. And whatever it takes to increase their chances of being profitable, that they can stay in business, that's my job to make sure that they have that opportunity.
So this is a polar question. Is the debate over nutrition in the Farm Bill over? Was that particular title set in stone with an earlier agreement?
Well, when I first got here and started actually working on the farm bill, getting my hands on it, and coming from the position that I was in the statewide position of ag commissioner, you know, it was pretty surprising to me to really find out how much we talk that the nutrition takes up in the bill. We don't need people going hungry, and we don't need people abusing the system either. But the bottom line is roughly 85% of the farm bill baseline is now dedicated to food assistance, and we can't afford to forget our farmers. But I've said many times we need to put more farm in the farm bill, and Congress needs to provide, you know, I guess the way to say it's a hand up and not a hand out. And while I don't have all the solutions today, I certainly hope Congress can figure that out before October. But we've been at this a long time, and we've battled this, you know, on many different levels and many different circumstances. And we just got to come out with something reasonable and something that we can all sign on to that says, okay, I may not love everything in this, but it's something that will benefit the farmers. It's something that I think that will take care of the farmers. But we've got to produce. You know, you can't eat a check. And we can't just pass out checks. We've got to make sure the farmers can grow the food that can actually feed the Americans.
Senator, there is a committee on China. Congressman Hood made some comments suggesting that the committee didn't necessarily say that we needed to revoke PNTR for China, but did say there needed to be a change that might better leverage the U.S. position. How do you level the playing field with China, a player that clearly avoids the rules, but also a player that's very important for the success of agriculture?
Well, we spend a lot of time on the Hill talking about China. And, you know, of course, among other countries, but we are going to have to stop using unfair labor and ban dangerous chemicals in their aquaculture and seafood practices. Because, like I said, I've been at this a long time defending the, especially the catfish folks when we're getting huge shipments from China into our ports of entry. And that's how foreign countries are able to dump excess supply onto the U.S. market and those unfairly low prices, not even talking about the quality here of the carcinogens that are found in a lot of that fish that is shipped in from China when you actually do the testing. Because such a few low percentage has really been tested, and you cannot compare it to our domestic production. So not only does it put our domestic industry out of business, it puts Americans' consumer at food safety risk, because I have really been neck deep in that argument and that discussion there, and it's pretty scary when you look at the test results that comes out of that foreign fish and the amount of carcinogens in that compared to domestic, which is safe and healthy. And, you know, keeping our guys in business because they're doing the right thing.
Senator, shifting back to domestic issues, I see your name associated with the Farmers Freedom Act, and the discussion there is about the EPA's implementation of the Clean Water Act and now this revised WOTUS rule. Does that piece of legislation have a chance to see the light of day, and why is it important?
Waters of the U.S., that is something that has made my head spin for many years under different administrations, because the overreach was unbelievable. And, you know, we just go back to just using sound science and trying to make things that are sensible that you can actually implement instead of ideas that come from God knows where. Of treating a mud puddle like you would the Mississippi River and the regulatory agencies. We're just trying to clean it up, get something that's normal, and I just trust that the industry will benefit from it, but it is truly a challenge.
Senator, I see that you joined Senator Grassley and some of your other colleagues in questioning the EPA's restrictions on rodenticides. Here's a broader question. Do you believe that EPA is really using sound science in pesticide regulation?
No. I trust the industry and the industry experts, and they strongly disagree with EPA's approach. And, you know, I trust rural America, not those in Washington who regulate rural America. Just there's so many instances that you don't have enough time in this interview for me to give you the examples of had we listened to them, how wrong things would have turned out. So, no, I trust industry, and I don't think EPA is using sound science and pesticide regulations. I just don't, because it's been proven so many times when you actually go to the experts, to the scientists, and know, you know, the correct methods and the correct results that you get and compare them to EPA's. I'm sorry, that's just the way I feel about that.
I know you said on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, so in the same line of questioning on the EPA, how do you rate their regulatory efforts on renewable fuel? Is the administration picking winners and losers?
Boy, are they. And I rate it very, very poor. You know, some of it is just such nonsense that you just wring your hands thinking, how can you possibly be going in this direction? We want the safest and most affordable energy, but until that platform emerges, can we really just turn our back on fossil fuels? Nobody is against clean energy. You know, we all support that, but we have to have reasonable progression in going through electric vehicles, on implementing all of their regulations that they want implemented on clean energy. And it's not reasonable. It's not sensible. You can't get there that fast. It is totally ridiculous what this administration has put forward that this country could ever possibly meet. And it's just very clear, and as you can tell, I have a real strong opinion on that. And, you know, we have so many jobs related to fossil fuels. We have been using this for how many decades? We're not opposed to change, but I am opposed to not using proven, solid, effective means of energy that can run this country. And it's truly a challenge there. And if you've ever watched me in hearings on the Energy Committee, you can see that I get pretty passionate about that.
Senator, staying with that, Ben, does the nation have a clear direction on energy supply? And in your opinion, is the electric generation that we have in the country, and is the grid ready for increased use?
Well, if Washington had a clear direction on the nation's energy supply, I just don't think we'd be having this conversation. You have so many influences that are just driven by emotional urges, and the thing that they have a great idea, they think they have a great idea in many instances, but they have no background, they have no professional experience in getting to that point that they think they want to get to. So definitely not. You know, but there's some smart people in Washington, and I had the opportunity to work with so many of them, and I'm certainly not the expert on this, but I have been around, and I know what works, and I know the energy that through so many challenges that this country has faced, I know what's reliable, and I'm not going to allow this country to stumble in so many aspects because we're getting away from proven, resourceful energy policies.
Senator, many livestock producers are lamenting the lack of large animal veterinarians in their area to care for their animals. Can you share what your concerns are? I know a caucus is developed, and I know that there is pending language.
Coming from the aspects of feeding this country, you have to have healthy animals. You have to have the care out there, the best nutrition programs, the vaccine programs, to make sure you can raise healthy animals to continue your herd. Whether, you know, you're talking about the cow-calf operation, we've got to continue on. You can't do that without healthy animals. It is imperative that we have large animal veterinarians to care for them, to help us as producers make the best decisions that we can sustain those calves coming year after year, knowing when to sell those that need to be sold. And, you know, looking at the perspective of the veterinarians, you can't make as much money on large animals as you do small animals, because you can get in a lot of cats and dogs that one day, period of 8-hour work day, going out to a farm and extending that out, that you have to make those calls. Your time is just eaten up through the days. It's not as lucrative when you deal with the large animals as it is those small surgeries that people really get close to their pets, and they're willing to spend big money on it when you need a vet to come out and you got a prolapse that you need them to look at, or you're having a problem one calving that you've got to have that vet there to save. That's the difference there. But we're the ones that feed you. Those large animals are the ones that provide the food in that cafeteria every day, in that restaurant every day. And when you go to the grocery stores are stocked there, because we have kept safe animals around that can reproduce and continue on the production that we have to do to meet the needs of this country.
Still in the area of livestock, predatory species is becoming a bigger issue in lots of regions in the country. Bears, wolves, black vultures. What are farmers telling you, and is this a battle in Washington that agriculture can have any success?
You've got a lot of folks, especially out west, that are members of organizations that they certainly don't understand our domestic food supply, but the predatory species, whether it be the bears, the wolves, the cormorants, or buzzards, they eat our income. And they threaten, you know, our production and the production numbers that we have to meet. And, you know, the farmers and ranchers' way of life. No one wants to take out, you know, any animal, but we do what we do to protect our livestock because, you know, not only that, they impact our domestic food supply. And not to say we shouldn't care about our wildlife, but we need to care more about the farmers and the ranchers and the ability that is on their shoulders to feed this country. And when you have predators that come in and invade, you just have to handle that. Because you know well, Jeff, that these producers, they're just hard-working, salt of the earth, care about animals. But our number one goal is production and to make sure the children in that cafeteria are fed. Whatever it takes to do that, to take out whatever predator and whatever means necessary, that's just the fact. That's just part of it. That's just things that you have to do, and wildlife shouldn't take priority over people and the ability to feed them. I may be that mean woman, but, you know, if I've got coyotes out there, you bet I'm fixing to get them off that baby calf. And ever how many I have to shoot, that's just part of making sure we're protecting our production. I haven't eaten many coyotes, and I don't want to, but I've eaten a whole lot of beef. And I think that the fast food chains that feed the country every day, that they want to drive through there and get that sandwich and it's safe, that's my job. That's what we eat. That's our food supply. Whatever it takes to protect that, we are all willing to do.
Senator Hyde-Smith, we want to thank you very much for taking time here in a holiday season to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Thank you sincerely for being with us. And today, Senator, you've been here before. You know, you get the last word.
Well, I just appreciate the opportunity, any opportunity I have, that I can promote agriculture and that I can explain to Americans the process and how important that is of where your food comes from. I don't take those moments for granted, so thank you for this opportunity, and Merry Christmas to you.
Our thanks to Mississippi U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. for AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.